Dr. Ali Hamad, is that right? Okay. Currently serves as Environmental Public Health Program Manager in the Alaska Section of Epidemiology. This program works with state, federal, and tribal partners to assess and educate about the health hazards of chemical exposures and to develop intervention strategies to reduce or eliminate chemical exposures from air, water, soil, and food. And Ali received his Bachelor of Science from the American University of Beirut and a doctorate in environmental toxicology, which is nice to follow your presentation. And from the University of California in Irvine. Subsequently, he performed air quality health effects research at Johns Hopkins, where he also trained in risk sciences. He then transitioned to work on human health risk assessment and hazard identification of chemical contaminants before joining the state of Alaska. He's a diplomat of the American Board of Toxicology, and his non-epidemiology thing is he speaks fluent Arabic. Cool. And he's going to be talking today, and I'm going to see if I can do this. Suspected paleotoxin, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Inhalation exposure associated with, here we go, zoanthid? All right. It's not Arabic. Okay. Corals in home and commercial aquariums. So we're still in water in Alaska.
Thank you.
Masa al khair. That's good evening in Arabic. Betsy suggested I say something. Yeah. didn't want to disappoint. Let's see. This was a really cool topic to work on, and we always say it brought out all the nerds in the state. You know, those 2 days, you know, after we first heard of it, it's not such a common thing. I trained in toxicology. I had not even heard of paleotoxin. It doesn't mean that's a good excuse, but it's not a common thing. So it was novel and interesting and really fun. So how did it start? One afternoon, we got a call from an emergency room nurse. She called the Alaska Section of Epidemiology to report this poisoning in three people who were, one of them was hospitalized, the others were not. They were seen, though. And this person who was hospitalized had bitter metallic taste, shortness of breath, fever, nausea, tremors, high blood pressure and heart rate, muscle and joint pain. They had a dog that was vomiting and a cat that was lethargic. We followed up, we spoke with that patient that same evening, and he was really feeling bad. It was not something too pleasant, and we agreed to go the next morning and conduct interviews with all of them at the hospital, where they agreed to meet us. This guy stayed in the hospital for, I think, 2 days, maybe. We also tried to contact many people, including the FDA, because they had done some research on this topic at the Center of, for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. So just a little bit about how it happened. This patient who was hospitalized, his brother had brought him about 70 pounds of live coral. And they introduced it into this 200-gallon tank you could see in the picture. They lived in a trailer in Anchorage. This was introduced around 11 at night. These people came in. They said there was a mist in the air. So that suggests that maybe something from the tank was kind of aerosolizing and filling the room. So that's one possible route of exposure, water from the tank, how they could have been exposed possibly. So this is just a listing of the symptoms of those other two people, more or less similar. One of the hallmarks is this bitter metallic taste that people experience, and it has something to do with its mechanism that we could talk about a little bit later. So again, there's a man, woman, a man, and a dog and a cat. And those were not weak people. They were in good health. So a little bit, just to go back a little bit, when we called, they told us that they suspect it's paleotoxin, and we had not heard about it. And they had actually chatted with this aquarium shop owner, a friend of theirs, and he told them, oh yeah, I'd been exposed to it. And that's the lead they gave us. They had called the Poisons Control Center. They really didn't have a clue. So it's really good to have had people in the community who knew about this. And based on that, we had a better idea of what to expect and design a questionnaire based on the symptoms. And just a little bit of background, apparently it's a toxin that has some kind of cultural history. In the late 50s, researchers investigated what's called Limu Make Ohana, which is the deadly seaweed of Hana in Hawaii. And it was supposed to be, rumored to be in a sacred pool, and ill fate would befall anyone who disturbed the sacred site. And it reportedly, when it was applied to a warrior's spear, it would bring sure death to their enemies. Anyway, long story short, eventually some scientists were able to find that pool on Maui, and they isolated this new coral zoanthid species called Palithoa toxica. Now, how does palytoxin work? This is the molecule. It's a huge one. It locks the sodium-potassium pump in a passive mode. Usually that's an energy-intensive process where it uses ATPs in the cell. What this does, it locks it in, so the ion balance is disrupted in the cell, and you could imagine nerves, muscles, and a lot of other cellular functions get disrupted. It's one of the most potent toxins identified to date. 1 gram can kill 2 million dogs or 1 billion mice. It's pretty potent. Routes of exposure, dermal, if you have, especially if you have cuts or abrasions on the skin and you get in contact with these coral, usually if you take coral out of water or stress them in another way, they start secreting mucus like crazy. And not all of that mucus can contain toxins. Some of these corals, like the zoanthids, the palythoa species, can contain varying concentrations. And if you have a cut in your skin, it could go in and exert its toxicity. If you consume fish that had been feeding around the coral or feeding on certain algae that contain that toxin, some people have actually died from consuming some of those fish, parrotfish and whatnot. The inhalation route is not well established, though there have been some reports from some Mediterranean countries where there was an algal bloom of algae which produced this toxin. So it's not really just coral, and there are different hypotheses about whether coral and algae produce that toxin, or is it really the algae that live among those coral or on those coral that produce it and, you know, deposited there. So the inhalation was not, and even we published it in MMWR, and they were a bit skeptical, so we kept saying suspected and potential and whatnot. But we learned recently that there are a couple of researchers who got some funding to study this in an animal model, you know, generate aerosols and expose mice or rats or whatever they're planning to do. So following that, we tried to see, well, who's been exposed? That aquarium shop owner, turns out, said, oh, I've been exposed several times. And we went and paid him a visit and conducted our survey with him. And turns out many of his employees had been exposed as well. At least 4 of his employees were interviewed as well. Most of them actually were exposed at one time when they were dismantling this client's aquarium, and he had a ton of those zoanthids growing, and they did not use any personal protective equipment. Now, they did say that the second time you're exposed, it's much easier, and everybody we spoke with, they said, you feel like you're going to die. It's not something that they would wish on anyone. So actually one guy, he didn't want to be interviewed, but he took me to his truck and got out a camera and showed me a video he'd taken of himself where He was just in really bad condition, and there was some kind of chattering sound. He said, "Those were my teeth, because I felt so cold." So he must have been feverish. He said, "The temperature inside my home was 83, and I was freezing." So it's really bad, and that's something that most people feel when they're exposed to that toxin. The other was a family, a couple, where the man poured boiling water on the corals to kind of dislodge the coral. And naturally, you get many aerosols when you're splashing water. And him and his wife, even though his wife was just going back and forth through that garage, were in the intensive care units for 3 to 5 days. And they reportedly, even 2 years after the fact, had not fully recovered respiration-wise. Now, recently, a month or two ago, we also heard from a couple. We took some coral, tested it. It didn't show anything. But that's a suspect one. We just couldn't confirm it. So we wanted to confirm and see, is it really palytoxin? And working with the FDA, we collected some polyp samples, 3 from the aquarium shop, 2 from the home. Now, the aquarium shop has signs saying toxic, could be toxic, be careful, and whatnot. But, you know, you don't really know it until it happens to you. So we took some polyps off, put them in containers with water, and shipped them to FDA. We worked with Dr. Jonathan Deeds and his colleagues over there. Really nice people, super responsive, always available for any question. So he tested the aquarium shop. It was 6.2 milligrams palytoxin per gram coral. The home sample was 7.3. And just to, you know, put it in a frame of reference, Deeds and his colleagues had collected many samples from shops in different states. And even the toxic ones did not exceed a 3.5 concentration. So the ones we had were about double the highest he'd found. And this is just an idea. The one on the left is the one that we collected from the home aquarium. And the ones on the right are the ones collected by John Deeds from the different aquarium shops in different states. And you could see at least it's very similar to the one in slide C. But they could come in different shapes and whatnot. So the current recommendations for detoxifying palytoxin is to use a 0.1% bleach solution for 30 minutes. But it has to be in a controlled situation, and that should be sufficient to detoxify. And that's a recommendation we give if somebody has questions. There's a need for personal protective equipment and other safety recommendations. And those are not available yet, especially because there's some skepticism or not enough knowledge about whether it's aerosolized, what size, or whatnot, the potency. But I guess it's safe if one wants to have... I'm not going to go into it. But we spoke with NIOSH and FDA, and they said the science is not there yet, but there's a need for it. And nobody regulates coral except from an endangered species perspective, and that's done by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So hopefully down the line there could be a little bit more awareness about it. And, yeah, you go to these online hobby websites, and many of those people have heard of this. But many more have not. So that's why we went ahead and published it and tried to spread the news as much as possible. And we could see that it was really well received, and the MMWR article was shared widely. We got global questions about it. And these are the people who worked on that project. From Alaska Section of Epidemiology and the FDA. And that's about it. You know, at first we were scared of the, you know, we told the guy, just dump all your corals, you know, go and, you know, detoxify them, whatever, put them in bleach. But later we figured, you know, many people have them, just enjoy them, but really make sure you know how to handle them. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Hillary Booth, Oregon Public Health Division. Is this on?
Yes.
I'm Hillary Booth, Oregon Public Health Division. So just wondering, how do people typically source coral? Are they getting this locally? Can they buy it online? And then second question, if you're bleaching the coral, does it hurt the coral? Are there effects to the coral when you treat it like that?
I don't know much about bleaching the coral. I mean, you might kill them for all I know, but I wouldn't know exactly. That's really when you just want to get rid. I would think that you would kill them, but I'm not sure. But these people got them off of Craigslist. Not that that's, because the aquarium store also had them, so it's not like Craigslist is a shady place to get coral or anything. But, I was chatting with someone, he said it's a new thing in Alaska, they haven't had saltwater aquarium shops for a long time, so maybe that's why in the recent years we've heard more about it. The other thing is we didn't have that couple, that happened in 2012, and that was not reported to the state. So we didn't know about it. This was just through this kind of roundabout way. Yeah.
I was a little disconcerted that you said you called the Poison Control Center and they didn't know anything. I mean, have you brought them up to speed that this needs to be on their list?
The ER called at the time. We did not call them, but they were in the loop very fast. And now actually this other time that, which was not included here because we could not confirm it, the ER actually called the Poison Control Center and they knew what was going on, but the patients actually walked into the ER with our MMWR article. So, but the Poison Control Center told them to call us, so yeah, it's good communication.
Okay.
Yeah.
Quick one. Sorry, I missed this MMWR, but boy, I learn something new every day. What I would encourage is this is a water-associated outbreak, and I'm not sure it got reported to the Waterborne Outbreak Surveillance System, NORS, or National Outbreak Reporting System.
Yeah.
We'd love for it to come in there because this is some very targeted messaging, and that surveillance system actually gets pretty wide reading as far as messages going out. So
yeah, that's pretty neat.
I can talk about how to
didn't know that's how it's classified, so that's great. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Diana from Texas. So I just had a question in regards to, so how quickly did they start feeling these signs and symptoms? How long did they last? And is there any lab testing for them? And did they set up that aquarium themselves at their house?
Yeah, in those cases, they were setting it up, and we don't know exactly how they were exposed. We know that the guy who was hospitalized was sleeping right next to the aquarium while the others who were not slept in other rooms. But usually it's a lag of about 6 to 7 hours before they get the full-blown symptoms. Some people, one of the aquarium shop people said, I was working over the coral dismantling something and I feel this kind of tingling in my nose. I know it's going to be a tough night. So some people might sense it, but really the full-blown symptoms are 6 to 7 hours later from what we've seen.
And how long do they last?
Usually they're hospitalized. We've seen them hospitalized for a few hours to a few days. And, that couple, they were in the intensive care unit for 3 to 5 days, and their symptoms supposedly persisted longer. Actually, the woman, in that couple, she was pregnant in her 6 months, and she had a probably a premature birth. They said that the child is fine otherwise, but it's probably because of that.
Okay. And no lab tests for that? I mean,
the lab tests, there's nothing yet. I mean, they've analyzed it in coral and fish and whatnot, and from algae. When that happened, we coordinated with the emergency room to leave us blood and urine samples, and our public health lab people picked them up, but after chatting with them and the FDA, they figured, Gavi inhalation exposure, whatever was inhaled, and this is very potent, so you don't need much to sense it. They figured we don't have the good techniques to even detect.
All right, thank you.
So we never tried it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.